Here at Talk of the Nation, I'm Melinda Penkava. Neil Conan is on assignment in London, and we're going to change topics now to talk about enemy combatants. Should U.S. citizens suspected of links to terror groups and jailed in the period after 9/11 have access to lawyers? This week, the American Bar Association denounced the Bush administration's policy towards some enemy combatants. And joining us now are A.P. Carlton, who is head of the American Bar Association. He's on the phone from Seattle. And Lee Casey, a former legal advisor on constitutional affairs at the Justice Department. He is here in Studio 3A. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And you can join the conversation. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. A.P. Carlton, I'd like to start with you. Your organization passed a resolution yesterday. It was directed at the Bush administration. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it was not directed at the Bush administration. We took a policy position with respect to enemy combatants. We agree that we must aggressively fight the war. We agree with the administration. We join them in fighting the war on terrorism. However, at the same time, we have to protect the fabric of our democracy, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. What we did was we took a policy position which basically had three or four elements to it. First, we believe the administration should explain the basis and scope of its authority to detain U.S. citizens. Now, we're not questioning the right to detain U.S. citizens for suspected terrorist activities. We just believe the basis and the scope of the authority to do that needs to be explained. We think that citizen detainees, U.S. citizens, should have access to judicial review to determine their status and should not be denied access to counsel. Very, very basic, fundamental American values.
Mm-hmm. And the ABA, this was a majority of the ABA voting?
The House of Delegates of the American Bar Association is basically the Congress of the American legal profession. It's 540 lawyers that meets twice a year as a legislature. 83% voting in yesterday voted in favor of the position. When that happens, that tells us that there is a deep-seated consensus, I believe, within the American legal profession that what we say is what the lawyers of America think.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lee Casey, why not let enemy combatants, U.S. citizens, mm-hmm. see an attorney?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. First of all, they are not criminally charged. Under the Constitution, you have a right to an attorney when you are criminally charged under the Sixth Amendment. None of that applies to enemy combatants. They are not criminal defendants. So there is no legal basis, there's no legal requirement that they be given access to a lawyer. Then it becomes a policy question of ought we nonetheless give them access to a lawyer? And I think the real problem with doing that is that it makes interrogating them, trying to find out what they know and what they may know about future attacks planned against the United States, very difficult. Keep in mind, our job as lawyers is to get in between the individual and the government. That's what we do. We defend people against the authority of the government, and that's just inappropriate in this situation. If you gave the detainees a lawyer, they very likely would not cooperate because they would realize they have an advocate. And an advocate, frankly, whose first who the very first thing out of his or her mouth would be, don't talk. I mean, that's what we always say.
That's what attorneys would say to a client. But they are in the American judicial system, or they are detained. They are not yet in the judicial system because they've not been charged. So A.P. Carlton, what about that distinction that Lee Casey makes?
They are American citizens. They are being held by the U.S. government. We believe the administration should explain the basis and the scope of its authority to detain U.S. citizens as enemy combatants. Just to label them as enemy combatants, stick them in jail, not give them the right to a judicial determination of that status and access to a lawyer. It's true, technically the right to counsel does not attach under the Constitution until there is a criminal charge made. Well, that's the whole problem here, is that it's not clear what someone sitting in jail and just has the label enemy combatant on them means. If they're in jail, they certainly should have the right to judicial review of their status And that brings along with it, we believe, a need for access to counsel. It's a basic, fundamental American value.
How much sway do you think you're going to have to persuade the administration to your side there?
Well, we're not actually attempting to persuade the administration. They have their own point of view. We've taken our policy position. I believe we'll probably call on Congress to establish clear standards and procedures governing the detention of U.S. citizens as a result of this action. It's clear what the administration's position is. You just heard it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's go to the phones. Right now we have Mike in San Jose, California. Hi, Mike.
Yeah. Hello. Regardless we're talking about American citizens or not, we're not talking about a regular crime. They took up a willful act to participate in an illegal usage of arms. They're not legitimate soldiers, and they don't fall under the same laws, even if they're in an international court. We're talking about a whole different ballgame here, and I don't think we can apply those same standards.
Well, I wonder, Lee Casey, are we talking about definitive fact here? Because these are two people. There are so far two enemy combatants
right.
we know about. It's Jose Padilla, former Chicago gang member, accused of plotting to detonate a dirty bomb. And then there's Yasser Assam Hamdi, a native of Louisiana who was captured in Afghanistan.
Right.
So is that the distinction here?
Well, I think
our caller is saying they are enemies.
Well, and that actually is not a bad way to put it. I mean, an enemy combatant is an individual who is fighting for the other side. The caller is also correct that in this instance, these individuals not only are enemy combatants, but they are unlawful enemy combatants because of the means that they have chosen to conduct their hostilities. What that means is that as enemy combatants, regardless of whether they are citizens, and if one wants to look for the legal basis, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution is a good starting point, making the present commander-in-chief, the laws of war, and the Supreme Court's decision in In re Quirin, or Ex parte Quirin in 1942, established that the president can indeed detain people as enemy combatants during wartime for the balance of the conflict. He can also prosecute them. Now, in Padilla's case and in Hamdi's case, the government has not yet chosen to prosecute. If it does, then obviously they will be entitled to counsel and all of the due process rights appropriate at that time.
A.P. Carlton, would that satisfy you that once there is a case that begins against them, that they can get access to counsel?
Well, no, they are U.S. citizens, and they are in detention by the U.S. government. And just, it is a slippery slope we get upon when we begin to deny basic rights to American citizens. The idea is that we don't want to forfeit the very freedoms we're fighting to protect for our citizens. And there is a distinction, I grant, there is a distinction between somebody being found on the battlefield and someone being arrested at O'Hare Airport. I agree with that. And we'll let the courts sort that out. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about people who are detained, and I doubt that Article 2 overrides the Bill of Rights.
Let us go now to Shannon, who's in San Diego. Greetings, Shannon.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question just about, I'm concerned about how far he's, our president and John Ashcroft are planning to go with this. They're calling it the new normalcy, and we already have sort of a camp at Guantanamo Bay, and he also talks about creating more camps. And, I mean, my real concern is with the forced registration and everything, and they also say that they want to expand it to countries. Any country who needs a visa to get into the U.S. will eventually have to be forced to register.
Well, we should actually make a distinction here because the Guantanamo Bay is a different ball of wax from what we are discussing with U.S. citizens.
Yeah, it is. That's true. It's more foreign detainees and not U.S. citizens. But I'm still just concerned about how far are they going to go with this? Are we going to have a repeat of Japanese internment camps, or really
I'm going to put that to Lee Casey just after I tell you that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Lee Casey?
Well, no, we are not going to be seeing internment camps like we saw during World War II, although it is important to note that the Supreme Court did uphold that as constitutional. During wartime, the rights of the government and the rights of the individual are balanced differently than they are in peacetime. And there are a lot of things that the government can do during war that it cannot do during peace, even including two United States citizens. United States citizens have been captured as enemy combatants throughout our history. During the Civil War, for example, there were tens of thousands of United States citizens held by federal authority. No one questioned the legality of their detention.
ACAP
And I should also point out that in the Curran case, one of the individuals involved was a U.S. citizen. The Supreme Court said it doesn't matter.
A.P. Carlton?
Yes, ma'am. I believe we just referred to the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus during the Civil War.
Absolutely
not. I beg to differ with the analysis. My own state Supreme Court in North Carolina refused to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. It is probably one of the blackest marks in the history of the United States that we did that during the Civil War.
Okay, I have to respond to that.
Okay, briefly.
We are not talking about the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. During the early days of the Civil War, maybe 9 months, Abraham Lincoln, on his own authority, suspended habeas corpus. After that, he had congressional authorization to do so, which the Constitution permits. The American citizens who had been enrolled in the Confederate Army, who were held as enemy combatants, had nothing to do with the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. No one questioned that they could be lawfully held as enemy combatants.
Oh, okay, I do want to bring this back to 2001, 2003. And we do have a question here from a listener in Hood River, Oregon. Stan writes, doesn't there have to be an official war for there to be enemy combatants? A.P. Carlton?
Well, that is a question for the courts to answer. And I think Mr. Casey has gone beyond that analysis. Enemy combatants, that is a term that is buried deep in the jurisprudence of World War II. To bring it forward now under these circumstances brings forward that question, and the Humdee case and the Padilla cases are working their way through the courts, and I think we're going to get some judicial definition on it. Our policy is an attempt to inform that debate.
I wonder, A.P. Carlton, do you see a distinction then between Humdee and Padilla?
Yes.
Because one was caught overseas on a battlefield.
There's certainly a difference between somebody who's standing in the middle of a battlefield pointing a gun at you and someone at O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm. But the ABA's position the other day would give him right to an attorney as well as...
Well, he's an American citizen. John Walker Lind was given that right.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think a distinction's been made between those two?
Maybe Mr. Casey can tell us.
Mr. Casey.
Well, I think, frankly, John Walker Lind would be a lot better off had he been treated like Humdee and Padilla. He was put through the criminal justice system, so obviously he got a lawyer. He pled out. He got 20 years. He's going to do every one of those 20 years. I will bet you my house that there is no president from any political party that is going to pardon John Walker Lind. Humdee and Padilla may or may not face criminal charges at the end of the conflict, that is, when al-Qaeda is no longer capable of carrying out military-style actions against the United States. They may very well simply be let go, like most of the people at Guantanamo. There's no need to criminally prosecute them.
Well, I guess we'll see what the Supreme Court says eventually. I hope we will, and I guess we're in a position now where the Fourth Circuit case is going forward, and we are probably going to look at filing an amicus brief.
And that's on the Humdee case.
Yes.
Let's get one more call in briefly here because we just have about a minute. Ryan is in Long Island, New York. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how you doing?
Good, thanks. Wanted to make a comment about, we are all United States citizens, most of us that live here anyway, except for some of the few illegal immigrants that are possibly in the process of becoming American citizens. The way I feel is we need to pull together as people. We need to realize that this is a time far different than any time in our past. Besides Pearl Harbor, I believe the attacks on the Twin Towers of 9/11, that's something that needs to wake us up.
So which side, who would you side with between A.P. Carlton with the ABA or Lee Casey here?
I side with the fact that they should not be provided lawyers. Being Americans, we do not torture these people into giving us information.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and well, I'm going to give A.P. Carlton one last chance to respond to that.
Well, our position is that it's a fundamental American right to have a lawyer when you need one. And there, I can't think of a more definite description of the type of situation where the government is trying to deny somebody the status of being charged criminally. Mm-hmm. They're just holding them where it would be a good thing to have a lawyer.
And we have to end on that note today. Thanks for talking with us this afternoon. A.P. Carlton is head of the American Bar Association, and Lee Casey, former legal advisor on constitutional affairs at the Justice Department, was here in 3A. Thank you both. In Washington, I'm Melinda Pencava, NPR News.